there, though. It's worth a quarter to find out how it's done. How many times have you watched magicians do illusions on television and say, my goodness, I'd give 50 bucks to find out how it's done. I'm going to save you $49.75 if you go right now. She's in there right now, alive, living and breathing, Satina. Find out how it's done. In that cabinet with blades at each and every turn, she's trapped, twisted, bent, contorted, her body entwined, mangled and tangled around those 18 steel blades. She's in the cramped confines of that coffin-like cabinet, and you'll see her in there. And you keep talking because we got another act to go, and we did in the sideshow, too. We got several acts after this one. And remember, folks, after you've seen this, move right down in front of the main stage because your next act will be right over here. You don't want to miss the rest of the show because after this, we're going to have some of the other strange people come out and entertain you. By golly, she's in there. Haven't given away a $5 bill yet today. Now. Once you've seen it, move right down the other side. Kind of make room so people can get down. It's only a quarter, 25 cents, a fourth of a dollar. Find out how she does it. She's alive in there, living and breathing, doing what she knows how to do best. Santina. Resented. To over 100,000 people at the State Fair in Dallas, Texas at $1 each. You go right now at a reduced admission price. See her for yourself. Keep the line moving, please. Up one side, down the other. Once you've seen her, move right along. Let somebody else have a chance to see, please. We can't leave her in there too much longer now. It's a mighty tight fit. It's mighty difficult, and I don't want to injure the young lady. She is of a delicate condition, and I don't want the young lady injured in any way. So if you'd like to see her, hurry right along. Hurry just a little bit, if you will, please. Can't come up this side, honey. I have to go around there. Hurry just a little bit, if you will, please. I'd be standing up, but I'm going to trip somebody with a cord if I do. I like it, Steve. I'm going to teach Steve how to do this and put him in the work in the sideshow for about a week this summer.
Dick, do you do a grind for this, Dick? Do you do a grind for this?
Let's see how Dick's grind goes for this particular act.
I'll take the quarters. Hurry right along now if you'd like to see her. Serpentina, she's in there, but what a shape to be in. Coil, twisted, turned around. That's large steel blades like a giant snake or reptile. Serpentine, I'll ask you, please, once you've seen her, to move right along. We cannot hold her in there but a very few moments. Otherwise, she's going to suffer horrible cramps, and that's for sure. Oh, hurry just a little now if you're going. Please do not pay until you're actually on the platform. Thank you very much.
I don't miss this one. This is your last call, your last chance.
Now, if
you're
need
in line,
change, you'll be glad to change anything except the married lady's name. She's in there all right, but oh, goodness gracious, what a shape to be in. Twisting, turning, dodging, dislocating every bone, muscle, tissue in her anatomy from the top of her dainty little head all the way down to her dirty, dainty little feet. I'll ask you, please, move right along because we can only hold her in there a very short time now. So hurry along, please, if you're going. She's in there all right, but my goodness gracious, what a shape to be in. Serpentina from the Isle of Man with the yellow elastic tissues, dislocating, twisting, turning, bending every bone, muscle, tissue in her anatomy from the top of her head down to her 12 double A's. Serpentina is here and she is alive and she's positively in the box. But, of course, the only way you'll ever know if I'm actually telling the truth is to come up on the platform and look in. She's in there all right, but what a shape to be in. Serpentina, twisting, turning around the large steel blades like a giant snake or reptile. Serpentina, last call now. Hurry just a little if you're going, please. Hurry just a little if you're going, please. Come on, last call. I can only honestly keep her in there for just a few seconds longer. Otherwise, she's going to suffer terrible cramps, and I am not joking, especially on this cold day. Imagine what a position she would have to be in. Imagine, duke it to me, diazook it to me. Thank you very much. All right, sweetheart, come right up here. If you could hold just a moment, please.
Okay.
There was a little boy that came up, and he handed me a dollar. I believe he was in a blue jacket, and I asked him how many, and I think he told me his age 3, and I only gave him back a quarter. Does anyone know who he is? Because I'd like to give him his change. That's him. For 3 people? Well, thank you, ma'am. It's so refreshing to find some honest people on a carnival midway. Thank you very much. I honestly did not wish to cheat anyone, strange as it may seem. Thank you very much.
Okay. We were suggested, you still want us to do that?
Yeah.
That we talk a little bit about the carny language. There are 2 parts to carny language, and I don't want to
I'll never speak to you a Giazan.
If you'll be as a Liazan, he is on it for a Siazakan, I'll do it. What we were talking is carny talk. I'm not going to tell you how that's done. It's just a form of pig Latin. But we do that. If you're on the midway and I see, somebody sneak into the tent, and I wanted to tell Dick about it because I didn't want to stop everybody from watching the spiel, because then I wouldn't turn too many. I wouldn't get too much money on it if I took their attention away, I just say, me as Arx, he is under the T is up, something like that. The other thing is the language that we use. A sideshow in the carnival business is called a 10-in-1. It's always built as a circus sideshow, but it's called a 10-in-1 because they're 10 acts into one tent.
She's coming out of the cabinet now, ladies and gentlemen. All right, she's very stiff, she's very sore, she's having a hard time of it, and I'm going to fall off the damn platform if I'm not careful.
How about a hand for Mrs.
There
Tanner,
she
huh?
is, Serpentina, the girl with the yellow elastic tissues from the Isle of Man.
But several other things we do. The outside of a show is known, the facade out there, the banner line, is known as the front. In front of the banner line is the bally platform, where we make a bally. It's short for ballyhoo. The person out there is not called a barker, never was, never has been, never will be. I've got something at home that's a barker. It has a tail and a cone nose and has 4 legs. That's a barker. Human beings that work on a sideshow and run their mouths are called talkers. The audience is the tip. When we get them into the show, we turn the tip. The tent is called a top. And so on and so forth. The bathroom is a doniker. And that way we can talk to each other. We have our own jargon and own cant that's very important to any ethnic group, very important to any trade. And carnival is not just a way of making a living. It's got to be a way of life. It's the only way it's going to be done.
Why don't you explain the layout of the lot and where the sideshow is found and why it's on the back end?
All right. On a carnival, shows and fun houses are called back-end units because generally the games, what we call joints, are front-end units. In other words, as you walk onto the lot, the first thing you go by are the games and the rides, and you get down to the back end, and the traditional place for a sideshow is right across the back end, and that added a little flash to the midway. That made it look a little prettier. There's an old carnival joke, "Dear Mom, business is great. Please send me some money for flash." And that was a traditional place for a sideshow in the midway. Nowadays, they might just put you anywhere. It's not like it used to be. So that's one reason that they're getting to be fewer and fewer shows, that there's fewer and fewer considerations in your coat pocket. Fewer and fewer consideration for the shows. It makes it a little harder. I'm taking my outfit on a circus next year and getting away from carnival. Dick's retired. Bobby Reynolds is still on the carnival. But there are fewer shows and fewer sideshows in particular, not because it's harder to get acts or harder to get human oddities. It's really no harder than it ever was, and there are just as many around, although not as many of them want to work in a sideshow. It doesn't have the glamour it used to. But it's getting harder and harder to deal with the public and getting harder and harder to deal with the carnivals. That's the only reason they're dying out. They still do a pretty good business. In fact, my sideshow grossed more every year I had it out. Want to do fire? Did it already. You were late. You were eating lunch. I could do the mice pitch and show them that I don't have any mice to sell. I had 1,500 of these Wednesday, and I sold the last 50 today. But this is a pitch. This is a traditional pitchman's thing. It's a magic pitch, and there are all sorts of magic pitch from a whole package of tricks to a single item. This particular pitch is over 100 years old. If it's done right, you can think it, make the people think it's something out of the space age. They couldn't believe that it'd be something that is so simple. When I do this pitch, the bait box is the only pitch I ever do where I just out and out say anything that I happen to feel necessary to get the people in. I try to give them a little hint I'm full of it, but that's what they expect. You know, you can't go down to your supermarket or your gas station and say, "You guys ripped me off. I had a lettuce wasn't any good, and you charged me 89 cents for it." But you can come out to the carnival, and I hit you a quarter for that, and you can stand there and scream at me, and I'll listen to you. It's better than psychologists or psychiatrists. It's a lot cheaper, too. Okay? So, I mean, you know what we're going to do when you get out there. But this is a pitch. I work these in shopping centers, flea markets. This is my wintertime money, and I also work them on a sideshow. And this is called the Magic or the Wonder Mouse. And if you look in the hand, I'll show you how he operates. You place him on the hand. When you're ready, you make him go forward. There he goes. We'll have him stop, back up, crawl in the hand, turn right, turn left, and we're going to have him roll over. Say, "Young lady, would you do me a big favor? Would you say roll over for me?" She did that good, didn't she? Now, I'm going to show you how he works. If you look under the nose, you can see the secret. See the little dot, everybody? The little black. Let me take it off so you can see it a little better. That's a magician's gimmick. Now, years ago, they'd call these a magic motor. It most certainly isn't a motor, and you get into trouble when you do that. And I sell just as many calling it a gimmick. Now, that's how easy it works. They all work the same way. They all come in various colors. I showed that to a girl here this morning. She said, "Oh, I know what that is. My dog has them." That's not it. It's not alive. It's not a magnet or a motor. You don't have to buy any gas or batteries, hooray. It's made of nothing more than wax and wire. It works on a very simple physical principle. It will stick to other things. You can do other tricks. For example, place it on a coin. It'll stick right to it. Next time you go out to eat, tip the waitress with it. Just don't tell her I said to do it. Okay, I'm in enough trouble already. That's a mean way to save money. Or put the coin in a glass, you cover it with your hand, and yet it will. Willie told me he's getting tired of this. We can make it rise up and down. Nobody ever gets that from me. Maybe they get it and don't like it. The inside of the glass. Sooner or later, somebody's going to say, "Hey, I want to look at your quarter." Well, show it to them. Just flick the gimmick off first. It's over here, okay? Keep it a secret. Now, it'll work on any small object up to the size of about two silver dollars, up to that weight. But this is my favorite, and I don't have time to show you everything. This is for you folks that smoke. You have friends that smoke, and they'd rather bum your cigarettes than buy their own. And I'll show you how it works. Put the gimmick on the cigarette, drop it back in the pack, and the next time they ask you for one, let them have it. Nobody smokes one that strong anyway. I did that at a party last night. Three guys tried to sober up. Now, these come complete with the mouse, the gimmick, and I hold up the package now if I had any left, and complete instructions for all the tricks. If you'd like to have one, there used to be a penny in England in 1898. There's 65 cents for one, or two for a dollar. If you get two for a dollar, we'll give you a male and a female. You can try to raise them. I believe they breed in captivity. I don't know. And I'm sure some of you have seen, I'm not going to tell you exactly how this works, because I'm going to have them for sale here in the morning. So anybody wants one, I'll be over there when he's not selling the pins. But it's the forerunner of the squirmels. So if you want to know what it is, ask any kid that knows what squirmels is. And they sell for $2, and they put them on TV. And they used to be made out of cork, and then wood, and then plaster of Paris, and now they're plastic like everything else. But they work. I didn't tell you everything, but no more than if you went to Al's Magic Shop here in Washington, would he tell you how a trick works before you paid for it either. Okay? That's a good little item for that price. Okay. I just wanted to say one thing. The main thing in a pitch of that sort is to make the audience laugh and smile and look them right in the eye, because it's so important that they get kind of up for it, and they're kind of happy. And if you can, it's an old saying, if you can make the people laugh, you can make money. Okay? If I just said, "Well, watch him, he's going to go," you'd have probably never even thought about it would be anything interesting. Okay? There's going to be a tobacco over to where there's tobacco over there. If you never saw tobacco outside of a cigarette, that's real tobacco. That's not that funny stuff. And they're going to auction it off over there. So you might want to catch that. That'll be the next part of the American Talker Symposium here at the Festival of American Folklife, sponsored by the Smithsonian Institution. And we thank you. Next time you go to a carnival, listen to guys like us. We need you. Thank you very much.
She coming? I imagine. she'll be here.
Just a minute ago.
Yes.
Right across the road from us.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Yeah, no, come and tell them something, man. We need some, the establishment down here. Amanda, or you? What we need mainly is somebody to pull this cable along. Steve, otherwise we'll pull it out and we'll get a disconnect, Steve. We need more of it, too, if you want to know the truth. They've been bringing an extension.
It's been long, but it's one section short, I believe.
It's one section short now.
Can we make it with it, if we can get that answer, it'll make the other one.
Come on, you want to tell them anything? What's happening? You know?
Welcome to the tobacco auction at the American Talkers area. We have two gentlemen who are associated with tobacco auctioneering, Mr. Bernie Demkins, who owns the Triangle Tobacco Warehouse, who loaned us the tobacco and who is also part of the auction, and Bob Cage, who's an auctioneer from Virginia who travels up and down the East Coast doing tobacco auctioneering. And I'll let them explain a little bit about how the auction runs and then run through it for you.
Okay, welcome. Glad you came here today. Generally, what we would have in a way of a situation to sell tobacco would be a warehouse that would cover anywhere from 2 to 10 acres, depending upon where you are. These rows, like you see here, would not extend a matter of 15 or 20 feet. They would go sometimes a quarter of a mile, like in Lexington. And there would be just like a ocean of tobacco. You look across and you see nothing but tobacco. Which case, we would go in and start a sale in the morning at 9 o'clock and continue what I'll be doing here. I'll be doing here in a matter of a minute or two what we'd be doing 3.5 or 4 hours there continually, except for lunch. To my right is Mr. Bernie Demkins, who would be the warehouseman. Now, he is actually a warehouseman in Maryland, about 35 or 40 miles away from him, and we work together early part of the year in April. What he does, he looks at this tobacco and he makes an assessment of what he thinks it's worth per pound, and he sells it for the farmer. He'll look at it and he'll say $1.50, and I will start out my chant at $1.50 looking for bids. Over on the other side of me, I would have all the major companies represented, American companies, the manufacturers, plus some merchants, guys who deal in tobacco, sold overseas. They go to Germany, France, England, Japan, etc. I would have American rentals, and the major American manufacturers would buy probably three-quarters of the tobacco. The other third would go to foreign countries. So if he would say $1.50, I would start at $1.50. I would come down, $49, I got $48, $49, I got $50, $50, $50, I'm American. That would be one sale. I would have sold that pile of tobacco in a matter of 3 or 4 seconds. At which time a ticket marker would come behind me and mark on this ticket $1.50 American, and we would go on to the next pile. He stays tuned in to what I say, and that is a sale concluded. On each ticket, you have the amount of tobacco that we're selling in each bale, and And also you have the farmer's name. This would probably represent a one truckload of tobacco from a farmer. Is there anything you'd like to say, Bernie, that I missed at all? Okay. After we finish this will be the last one I'll do. I'll have to go back to home tomorrow. After we finish this one, you may ask me a few questions, whatever you might be interested in knowing. So we can start up now. And when we start, you as representing buying companies, move right along. The buyers would generally be looking down to the tobacco. When they look up, they're making a bid. Sometimes they hold their fingers up. If I'm crying 45 and they do this, they're giving me 50. If I'm crying 50 and they do this, they give me 45. It's easy enough to catch on. And to understand more precisely what I'm saying, listen to the starter, if you can. And at that point, I'll pick up a chant and we'll just see what happens. All right, back up a little bit. Just a little. All right, now you all act like bars, okay? All right, here we go.
Okay,
yes,
150.
All right, $50. One, two, two, three, three, fittery, la, fittery, run, John, move along. Hey, give me $60. Hey, one, take a do, do, take a do, do, American. Hey, dilly, follow, bum, bum, $50. Give me one, I got two, do, three, four, five, feel, bum, bum, warehouse. Hey, give me $60. Give me one, two, two, do, do, take a do, heel, dilly, four, four, five, heel, buzz. Hey, dilly, $50, fitted, a American. Hey, dilly, follow, bum, bum, follow, bum, follow, take a some, hey, when you go nine, land, $50. Thank you, now, $50. American. Hey, dilly, dilly, all right, get around, in a meeny, 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 money, my ho, ho, get around here, what you got here, a half minute. All right, all right. Hey, little half minute. What we try to do is to not stop at sale. All right, leave all the five over here. Hey, at 45, who are you buying for, sir? What is your company? All right. Hey, and 45. Hey, little 45. Keep him here, little 45. Get along, 45, 45. Come on, honey. Hey, little 45. Give me a second dance. I'm here, little little and down and dance with me, darling. Can you dance? Hey, little 49. Fit it down. Hey, my heart. Fit it do. Fit it do. Hot, hey, hot. Hey, little 45. Fit it. Second, I'm here. Hey, little nine, nine, nine. Second dollar, ha, ha. Universal. Hey, give me a second dollar. One, ha. Say, little one, ha. Lila. Hey, little 45. Give me a second. I'm here. Hey, nine, nine. Fit it dollar. Fit it dollar. Fit it dollar. Hot, hey, hot. Hey, little 45. I want to say some me now, Helen. All right, little get around, get around, get around. Hey, me me say it down. Mama want to say one, two, two, two. Say it really, me me say it four, four. Say it bam, bam, bam. Say it bam, bam, bam. Hey, little fall bam, say it some me. Ain't none, none. Fit it all, one, one. Left up your leg. Hey, little fit it one, one, two, two, two. Fit it two, Helen. Hey, little fall bam, say it some me. Ain't none, fifty dollar, ha, fit it all, hot jade. Hey, little fat, give me say it some me. Ain't none, none. Say it all, one, one. Say it one, one, Helen. Hey, little fit it all, fit it all, fit it all, fit it all, mama. 52, 52, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6, 8. Here it is, second one, give me 2, 2, 6, 2, 3, me 4, 5. Here it is, me 6, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8, 9, 9, 6, 9, Tennessee, is that right? Thank you. All right.
Now you're finished.
I'm a finished auctioneer. Definitely a finished auctioneer. Any questions at all before I leave here? No? Okay, thank you. One question.
Can we have you do some of the imitations that you do of some of the auctioneers that you've met?
Well, for a fee, I'll do that. I don't come cheap. How much, Steve? It was a little extra, right? You didn't promise me this when I came up here, did you?
No, we didn't.
You didn't. And you're not going to give me anything either, right? All right. Joe Burnett, a real big guy with a deep voice. 68, 88, 69, run, John, 69, 71, hon, to do the 72 American, 73, he falls, he falls, holy git. Okay. Country Hillbilly Auctioneer. Here, $5 bid, now will you give me $40 for the billy money, will you, little 40, you'll who'll give me $40 bid, little $40 bid, now will you get a toodle doodle, settle down a peel, little $42 bid. All right, there's one more. Let's see. Woodrow Bradshaw. He would say 41 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. Just something to fill up the words between the bids. All right, 41 and a toonie and a reenie and a man that caught the bass. Hey, 45 and a sicky and a semi and a possum up a gum stump. Hey, 42 and a reenie and a phony and a 5 and a sicky and a semi and a 8 9 9 9 49 49. Are you bidding? Hey, 49 49. Look it. Anybody else? Let's see. American. Who's that, Speed Riggs? 6 8 American. Okay, I'll answer a couple of questions if you got them. All right, what do you have in mind? Okay, tobacco is sold. We start this crop of tobacco in Maryland like in April of next year. This tobacco was hung in the barns over the winter. We'll be selling 19 and 80 crop in 81 in Maryland. From that point, I go to Georgia, and I'll start down in about July. And I will follow the sun on up, and I come to Virginia until I stay till about Thanksgiving. Then I go to the Burley and stay out there till about February. So I'm working a lot, really. Welcome.
Somebody over here had a question for you.
Okay. What's it? As fast as I can do. Hey, I'm a Okay, thank you. That's it. Nice.
Thank you very much. This was just a do you want to, should I turn it over to Mr. Demkins if you have it? If you have any other questions, we'll try to answer them. If not, we're going to be starting the household auction in just a few moments, and we'll be starting back on the Carnival Talker stage and in the film tent in just a few moments. Thank you very much, Bob, for being here.
The environment of Bourbon Street and the competition and the reason that they have a front talker at the famous Duro where he works. Bud?
Thank you very much, Dick. My name is Bud Corey. Down on Bourbon Street, I'm known as the Bourbon Street Baffler because if I can't dazzle you with my diamonds, I try to baffle you with my bull. By the way, how many of you people here have been to Bourbon Street, New Orleans? Let me see your hands. Great, great. How many of you people hate it when somebody asks you to raise your hands? Yeah, me too. Well, see, Bourbon Street, if for those of you who've never been down there, about 7 p.m. at night, they block off the streets and it becomes a huge pedestrian mall. It actually becomes the largest honky-tonk in the United States because you start off on Canal Street, Canal and Bourbon, you go down, you see a girly show, a jazz club, a T-shirt shop, another girly show, another jazz club, another T-shirt shop, perhaps a burlesque house, another jazz show. So there's a lot of competition down there, and all the clubs try to get your business, try to get those crowds to come into their club, and they employ people like me, we're called jive talkers, because we're always shucking and jiving, to stand out in front of their clubs and try to get your people to come in. Now, we're probably the last group of talkers that still you can legitimately call us barkers. If you heard some of the carnies before, they don't like to be called barkers. That term is passé. They say a barker is something small that wags its tail. Well, since the days of microphones and megaphones, they don't call them barkers anymore. They call them talkers, front talkers, back talkers. But on Bourbon Street, microphones are outlawed. They're illegal, so we've got to yell pretty loud over the music and let people hear us and let them know where we're standing and try to attract attention. So I'd like to give you a little sample of what I do. If you ever hear me, come on down, see me. And here's the way it goes. Oh, yeah, dig me, I'm talking loud. And I'm going to keep talking till I draw a crowd, because I'm talking about jazz. Jazz alive and well and living on Bourbon Street. There's no place like this place, anywhere near this place, so this must be the place. And I've been in lots of jazz clubs all the way from Bangor, Maine, all the way to L.A. But when I got to Bourbon Street, I'm proud to stay, because all day, all night, there's bound to be somebody who's got a horn, blowing going on sure as you're born. And when you have a party, be a smarty, get your feet to thumping. Turn the music all around the walls a little. When the neighbors start complaining and remaining, you know the joint is jumping. I'm out here in the corner of Conti and Bourbon. Come on down and see me out in front of Hip Ginland's famous door. Famous since 1934. Jazz, 15 hours a day. Five bands. Big five-hour sets. Come on and see me. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. Here I am, Bud Corey, the Bourbon Street Baffler. Thank you. That's somewhat the way it sounds. Now, all that yelling and talking is going on over the music, as you hear in the background. By the way, some of you might recognize that or may not, but that's pretty old. That's Louis Armstrong's Bourbon Street Five. Louis started on Bourbon Street along with jazz. He was a young waif, and somebody gave him a cornet, and he started a little group, and the rest is history. Thank you. We can cut the music now. When we start out our day, as I said, the front talkers get out in front of their establishments, and at the famous door we have a band ready to rev up, but they don't like to play to an empty house. So I call out there and try to get a crowd around pretty much the way I've got a crowd right now. And then we sort of give them a little free show, and I told you I was called the Bourbon Street Baffler because I do card tricks. And I stand out in the corner of Conti and Bourbon and do some card tricks with the people, which I'd like to do right now, if you don't mind. Do you like card tricks? Don't say no, because I'll do three just for spite. Okay. Okay. Now, it's hard to be humble when you stand up here dressed like this, all gaudy and shiny and everything like that, but I can be humble. I have humility if you want it. Underneath it all, I am humble. Underneath it all, Fruit of the Loom shorts. Three pairs for $2.98. You can't get hurt. But I'm going to get myself a deck of cards here and try to do one or two card tricks for you. Now, when you come down Bourbon Street and you see a sharper standing like this with a deck of cards in his hand, especially you young folks, I want you to understand this. When you see somebody who can handle cards like me, you're looking at the product of a misspent youth, you know. I don't use TV magic cards or marked cards or anything like that. I use an honest deck of cards. I can't make the bet down here or up here in D.C., but on Bourbon Street there's a standard bet with Bud Corey. Anybody who feels I'm not using an honest deck of cards, they can challenge me. It's a $50 bet. They bring their deck of cards, and providing the wind don't blow and knock all the cards in my hand, I could do any trick that I do up here now with another deck of cards or your honest deck of cards. I use no marked cards, no gimmicks, no wires, and that's important to tell you about that. Sir, you did say you like card tricks. Would you help us out and take a card? Now, show it to your friends, but don't show it to me, okay? You got to be honest with me. Now, a lot of people, when I name the card, sometimes when I name the card, people deny that it's the card, and of course, then we just makes me look bad. But I want you to understand that I'm going to do a minor miracle for you now. I want you to all pay attention. Watch carefully. Yeah, that was really enthusiastic. I think I'd like to do another one. May I do another one? You won't have to get up, sir. We'll just say stop at any time. But by the way, I want you to all understand, this is an honest deck of cards. They're all different. There's no duplicates in here. If you find a duplicate, you know, it's somebody planted it in there, honestly. But just say stop at any time. Now, sir, when I had you remove a card there, what did you do with it after you removed it? You held it in your hand. Then what did you do with it right after that? You gave it back to me, and I put it in a deck. Now, Bourbon Street Baffler, Slicky, I must have done something with the deck in my hand. This time, let's make it a little more difficult. Sir, you put the card back in the deck while you're holding the deck. How about that? Hey, well, how about that? Is that something? All right. Okay. Now, shuffle it up. Mix it up in there. Now, would you be honest with me? Will you help me out a little bit? I did this trick yesterday, and I thought I was really going to get a great ovation. I found out the card wasn't in the deck. The guy didn't. Did you put it back in the deck? Yeah. Okay. Some people, you know, they. Little lady, do you know how to shuffle cards? Would you shuffle these up, just mess them up a little bit? Did you see the gentleman's card? Did you see what card the man picked? Give him back the deck. Give him back the deck. Take the deck of cards, sir. Now, you help me just a little bit. I want you to fan the cards out and stare at your card. What's your name, sir?
John,
just stare at the card. That's all. And just put a mental picture of the card in my head. Did you? As I said, if you see somebody handles a deck of cards like me, you're looking at the product of a misspent youth. I said I was going to do three card tricks. I'd like to do one more. Do I have time to do one more for him? This is not one of my card tricks, or it is now because I bought and paid for it, but I was down in Georgetown. Yesterday after the show, and there's a lot of, I noticed, jugglers and street magicians you have in this town working. And I seen one fellow working, and he wasn't using a whole deck. He was only using six cards. And I was amazed by this. He did an amazing trick. I'd like to show you what he did, but he had his hat out in the sidewalk like this, sort of collecting tips. Laying right there. And after he did a few tricks, he took out a few cards out of his deck. He took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cards. Then he proceeded to take one card and put it up front. Then he took one, two, three cards and threw them in his hat. And he still had one, two, three, four, five, six cards. Well, I was amazed at that, and I hung around till his little show was over, and I walked up to him and said, "Sir, I'm a magician. I'm from New Orleans, and I'm not competition for you. So if you teach me that trick," thank you, folks. "If you teach me that trick, I'll give you $10. I'd like to take it back to New Orleans with me." And he says, "What trick is that?" I says, "The trick where you take one, two, three, four, five, six cards, and you take one card and put it up front, and then you take one, two, three cards and throw them in your hat, and you end up with one, two, three, four, five, six cards." I thought that was pretty good, you know. So he says, "Well, that's nothing to it. Here's the secret to it. You got to take six cards, one, two, three, four, five, six cards. And when you got that, you take one card and you put it up front. That's the misdirection, you see. Then you take one, two, three cards. When you bend down, they all look at the hat, see? And when you come back up, you still have one, two, three, four, five, six cards." Well, I paid him the $10. I went home that night. I went back to the hotel last night. I got up in front of the mirror, and I took one, two, three, four, five, six cards. And I took one card and put it up front. I took one, two, three cards and threw them in my hat. And sure enough, I ended up with one, two, three, four, five, six cards. Well, ladies and gentlemen, so I practiced and practiced, and now for the first time before a live audience, I am going to do the six-card trick. Pay attention. I'm going to take one, two, three, four, five, six cards. Carefully take one card and put it up front. I'm going to take one, two, three cards and throw them in my hat. And ladies and gentlemen, I have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Oh, I forgot how to do it. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. You've been a wonderful audience. And that's the kind of thing we do on Bourbon Street, the front talkers, the jive talkers. We'll attract your attention by our manner of dress and speech and the little sleight of hand tricks we do, and we'll tell you about jazz. And if any of you are fans of Bourbon Street, and specifically jazz on Bourbon Street, I'd like to talk to you about it. I'll be in the crowd here. Come by and see me. My name is Bud Corey, the Bourbon Street Baffler. Thank you very much, Dick.
Okay, thank you, Bud, for your card. I've been here since the beginning of the Folk Festival, and I've been able to often sit behind Bud when he does the tricks, and I still don't know how it's done, and I think that you all have learned that indeed he's an entertainer, and that's true of all of the folks we have here. Because what they're doing is selling you their showmanship and getting you to come inside, whether it be the famous door in New Orleans or a sideshow, a geek show, a medicine show, or whatever. We have with us this afternoon Fred Bloodgood, who many years ago during the Depression toured with a geek show and a medicine show. And he's going to come up here and give examples of some of the pitches that he did years ago for shows that no longer tour, and explain to you a little bit about some of the language that the showman uses to attract a crowd, a tip, that's you folks out there, and how the showman will turn the tip, get the audience to buy a ticket to go see the show on the inside. Dr. Bloodgood.
Thank you. Thank you, sir, very much. I suppose it would be safe to say that a medicine show and a geek show would be the furthest apart of any two organizations you could come up with. Do any of you know what a geek show is? Well, in the language of the carnival world, a geek show is what we call a wild man or a wild girl. And, of course, a medicine show is a pretty refined thing. But they have one thing in common. You use a certain amount of alliteration, and you use euphonious phrases at a balanced pitch. That's feature number one and number two. And the third thing is never let one grain of truth interfere with the story. Today I'm going to give you just a little bit of a geek show pitch to give you an idea what it's all about, and I think you'll see some of this poetry or alliteration through it. Ladies and gentlemen, you are now standing in front of the feature attraction of the entire Midway, the home of Neola, that strangest of all strange creatures. Now, Neola was brought here during the Great Evolution Trial that took place in Dayton, Tennessee in 1925. and she was examined upon at that time by some of our leading psychiatrists. Dr. Mullen, head of the Department of Psychiatry, claimed she had less intelligence, less brains than that of a chimpanzee. But let me paint you a word picture of that strange old girl. Now, you're going to have to picture, instead of a fat girl, you're going to have to picture the one that I'm going to tell you about. Also, will you go one step further in your imagination? Will you picture me with a large snake hung around my neck, which is how I would have worked 40 years ago, and a white leghorn chicken in the other hand, proclaiming that it is now feeding time and we're going to feed her? Just a moment. Let me paint you a word picture of that strangest of all strange creatures. She's 3 or 3.5 feet tall, has long, long arms that hang way down below the knees, eyes that actually pop out and glare just like two red-hot coals of fire. But I think the most peculiar thing of all about her, and I think you'll agree with me when you see her, is the shape of the head. That girl's head tapers at the top just like that of a coconut. Now, she doesn't speak any language, doesn't know any Cree, neither walks nor talks, just creeps and crawls, and spends her lifetime down in that steel-bound cage down in there now where you wouldn't expect a dog to live for an hour. She was found by Dr. Carter exploring for animals in the center of a deep, dark cave in the lowlands or swamp regions of Abyssinia. He heard the strange tale of some fanatical natives who claimed to have seen an animal in the center of this cave. Investigating their story, he found it to be fact, but he found not an animal, but a human being crouched upon a huge flat rock, just exactly as you're going to see her in there tonight, completely surrounded by a den of hissing, seething reptiles, some of them larger than a man's upper arm, some that could crush a human being with one coil of their enormous body, the same as you or I would crush a piece of food between our teeth. Now here comes the incredible part. As he watched her, she would tease, tantalize, torment them, until in their wildest of fury, those reptiles would strike, biting her all over her miserable body, upon the arms, the limbs, the cheeks, even upon the tongue, until the blood would actually course from those wounds, just as you would pour water from a glass. And then, often to avenge herself, she would pick up one of the larger reptiles, bite off the head with those long and tusky teeth, peel down the skin, and proceed, ladies and gentlemen, as repulsive as it may sound, proceed to peel it down, just as you or I would peel a banana and devour it, head, hide, tail, and all. Now they've been asking, when and what time are you going to feed her? And I want to say that time has now arrived. Now here's the part where you imagine me with the white leghorn chicken high in the air. Ladies and gentlemen, once, and once on this very exhibition, I'm going to throw down, down deep into the very bottom of that steel-bound cage, that live chicken you see me there now holding. Then you're going to see a most amazing change come over the old woman. The eyes will dilate, the pupils glow. She will emit just one long, soul-searing scream and leap clear across that steel-bound enclosure. Catch that bird between those two massive jaws. And speaking of jaws, the old woman has a single row of teeth on the upper jaw, a double row on the lower jaw. She'll bite off the head with those long and tusky teeth and proceed, as repulsive as it may sound, to suck, drain, and draw every drop of blood from that bleeding, throbbing, quivering, pulsating body, well, with the very same relish that you or I would suck the juice of an orange. Just think of it. It's one of the most disgusting, repulsive, revolting, and yet I'll say one of the most interesting sights you've ever seen in all your life. Now, it's natural to doubt the word of a showman. You may say you don't believe it, but if you go in there tonight, friends, and fail to find her just exactly as I've represented in every way, every shape, form, and manner, then I'll beg with you, I'll plead with you, I'll implore you to come back to the pay box. I'll refund your money as cheerfully as I took it from you. It's past feeding time right now, and I'm going to feed her within the next 3 minutes, and 3 minutes only, whether one of you go, all of you go, or none of you go. Hold it, doctor. Don't feed her just yet. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
A couple of questions, Dr. Bloodgood. Could you point out some of those alliterations and phrases? I noticed you just didn't say that the chicken was bleeding. It was bleeding. What were
throbbing
the
and quivering, yes.
Right.
Yes.
When three words can do, one never works.
That's right. That's entirely true. I think of other pitches of a similar nature, that is, where you use that kind of alliteration. For example, I used to work on the an attraction of Walter R. Cole, who was 5 feet 11 inches tall, 47 years of age, and weighed just 63 pounds. At this particular point, I would ask Walter to raise his right arm, and he would swing it up high. He'd swing it up high over the top. Here was this pitiful little arm, and at this point, here's the alliteration I was speaking of. At this point, I would call attention to it and say, there he sits in there, ladies and gentlemen, slowly becoming atrophied, slowly becoming ossified, slowly becoming petrified, slowly turning to stone. Unable to move, carried around from one place to another by his nurse, just like a mother would a babe, and yet apparently happy, for I've never heard him complain. You can see how that balanced pitch like that, it's... If I were to say that, as Dick said, never use one where you can use four words, my medicine show pitch, I never could say that we have a clean attraction, that you can come in there and it'll be clean. You mustn't say it that way. You must use several. You must say, there'll be nothing seen, heard, said, or done to mar the impunity or injure the propriety in any way, any shape, form, or manner of the most fastidious little lady in the community.
I would direct your attention to my left, your right. The photograph up here is of Dr. Bloodgood working in 1929 with his geek show. And you'll notice that it was a scientific show. He's dressed in a doctor's outfit with a stethoscope around his neck.
Actually, Actually, we would always have a sign up, doctors and registered nurses admitted free. But now, the crowning feature of the scientific part came the end of the lecture, as I had described it, as I did to you, and all of a sudden, a little boy would rush out of the audience and hold up a telegram to me, and I would kind of push him away, but he was insistent, and I would finally take
telegram.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It might be something important, something from home. Excuse me, I'll read it. And then I would stop and read this. Ladies and gentlemen, we have just received a wire from the Smithsonian Institution at Washington, D.C. Neola must be back by the 25th of this month for scientific study and research. And at this point, I would go into a very highly emotional state and say we've treated her like we would with our own daughter. And they claim they want her for scientific study and research, and they don't. They want to cut her up and dissect her and find out why she doesn't die from the bites of those many reptiles. But I cry out like the good minister of the gospel, and I say, don't kill her, but rather send her back. Send her back to the jungle that she loved and roamed those many years ago, back where the owls hoot and scream and await her arrival. And who knows, ladies and gentlemen, but what perhaps tonight, this very night, that some poor dear old mother is searching through that hideous, screaming, impenetrable jungle night for that poor, unfortunate offspring, in there now, just as you'd see her in her own native land. And then starts the grind, a live, living, genuine old human freak of nature, born to live just like you or I, actually degenerated until she's just as low, I'll say, just as primitive as the most primitive beast of the jungle. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. The Smithsonian Institution may never have gotten Neola, but we're certainly glad that Dr. Bloodgood, 40 years later, arrived in Washington. I want to bring up now Bobby Reynolds. Bobby has been selling pens under the green top to your right, my left. But for the last season, you don't speak of a summer, you speak of a season on a show, he has toured one of the last carnival sideshows on the West Coast. And I'm going to ask him to explain a little bit about the physical setup of the sideshow and then go into one of his opening pitches or ballet. And to explain a little bit about some of those terms. We got.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm on. Yeah, great. Hi. Ladies and gentlemen, can I have a little volume on this, pal? Thank you. Appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you... First of all, look at it this way. This is about 60 feet this way and 60 feet that way.